the show and read his article on this obscenity by the press and the Pentagon, their collusion to keep that whole story quiet. Thanks to everybody for listening today. Don't forget, we are a listener-supported program, theguyjamesshow.com. You can help out there. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Thanks to the Head On Radio Network and Billy Shears Music Director. See you tomorrow, gang.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, Barack Obama's pastor threw the senator and presidential candidate under the bus at the press club just 2 days ago. And yesterday, Barack Obama returned the favor, threw his pastor under the bus. And many of you will ask, why am I even commenting on this? I've talked in the past about other pastors, such as Pastor John Hagee, Pastor Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, all of McCain's pastors, and I will continue to talk about them because they don't have this kind of complex relationship that Jeremiah Wright and Barack Obama has. This is a case where John McCain sought out the endorsement of John Hagee, a person who's called the Catholic Church a great whore and has said all kinds of other awful things. But I do think it is important for you, for me, for Americans to analyze this. Not because I think that in any way we can attribute this to Obama. I don't think that's fair. Obama couldn't have been more clear, and I'm going to be playing for you some of the clips from what he said. He couldn't be more clear that he has finally broken any and all ties he had with Jeremiah Wright based on what Jeremiah Wright did. But I do think it's important because Jeremiah Wright said a number of things at the press club. Some were quite true. Some were quite false. Some, I think, were illustrative of the black church. Some, I think, were quite far from its traditions. Some of which were about greater understanding, most of which were about Jeremiah Wright enjoying his 15 seconds of fame. And because I know that this will be an issue all the way to November, I do think Barack Obama will be the Democratic nominee, and I am certain that the Republicans and the media will make an issue of Jeremiah Wright all the way till November. I think it is important, just this once, given it just happened yesterday and the day before, to parse out what Wright said, what he didn't say, and how Obama has responded. Because I think it's important for lots of reasons. One, it's important for understanding differences among the races in America, among blacks and whites. It's also important to understand differences between African Americans and other African Americans. I think in some ways Reverend Jeremiah Wright thinks he speaks for all black people, and he does not. And Obama made that clear. A number of other blacks made that clear. It's also important because given that the media is going to be using this against Obama, and Republicans will as well. In fact, they'll be probably more likely to even do it than the media in June, July, August, September, October, November. It is important to know what Wright said, what he didn't say, and how Obama responded. Also, it's important because for the next 6 months, you're going to hear people comment on Jeremiah Wright, on Senator Barack Obama, on their relationship, on the things that Wright believes in. And 95% of the people who comment will not have heard Obama's speech at the press, excuse me, Jeremiah Wright's speech at the press, National Press Club here in Washington. 95% will not have heard the full press conference where Barack Obama responded. And I want you to know I have heard it all. I have listened intently to every word that Jeremiah Wright said at the press club and to every word that Obama said at his press conference. And I want to tell you what they said. I think it's important that you know it and know the exact words so that when Sean Hannity or maybe your friend at the grocery store or your colleague at work or your second cousin says to you what they think was said, you at least will know the truth, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So that's largely what I'm going to do today, is explain to you what Wright said, how Obama responded, play some of those things for you, and then I very much want to talk with you why you believe that Reverend Wright, Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's pastor of many years, decided to throw the presidential candidate under the bus. Because it should be absolutely clear, Wright is doing Obama no favors. Obama recognizes this. Wright recognizes this. They are now enemies. And I want to talk about why that happened, both psychologically as well as politically. So, a lot going on in this hour. Let's start with what Jeremiah Wright said at the press club. Because up until this point, as you know, Barack Obama had gone to his church, had praised many of the things that the church had done, and had said that he hadn't heard the most extreme things that his pastor had said in 30-something years of preaching. He wasn't in the church that day. And then, of course, he condemned what he said. But at the time, Barack Obama tried to rise above it, tried to give, a very powerful message on race in Philadelphia a month ago, where he tried to rise above what Wright had said while distancing himself from Wright's remarks, at the same time recognizing the pain and history, I guess, behind Jeremiah Wright's words. Why Wright was so angry, and that relates to, you know, a man who grew up under Jim Crow, who grew up facing very different prospects from the one that Senator Obama faces. Well, Jeremiah Wright could have left well enough alone. He was asked at the press club why he didn't speak out sooner, and he quoted his mother, Wright's mother, who quoted Proverbs, the old saying in the Bible, better to be thought a fool with your mouth closed than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Well, unfortunately, Wright opened his mouth and removed all doubt. So what did Wright have to say? What's interesting about Wright's speech, actually, is the part of it that I think was planned and carefully vetted, and then came the question and answer session. His first 30 minutes of his speech before the press club was actually, I thought, mostly accurate, mostly interesting, was mostly not that extreme. He said a number of things, which I'll get to, about black liberation theology, about the history of the black church, that I thought were really interesting and not particularly controversial. If he had stopped his speech there and said, I won't take any questions, he might have actually helped Barack Obama. But then he took questions, and, well, we'll get to that too. Let me go through his speech first, though. Jeremiah Wright's speech, he talks about the fact that white people, many of them, don't know much about the black church. And that's true, I think, of many white people. I think many were surprised to see the cadences, the way that he spoke. If you have never entered an African-American church, then you might be surprised by sort of the call and the way that the preacher speaks and the people respond back, and it's a very active thing. I happen to like black churches. I've been to several of them, and frankly, I enjoy them more than white churches because I find many white churches I've been to are, shall we say, a little boring. Sorry, not my tradition. I find it a little boring. Most white churches I've been to, most black churches I've been to are not boring. They're very interesting. Not that I agree with everything that's being said, but I do love the energy and people calling back and forth, and I like the music. So I've been to many black churches, and I've seen this, and so none of that really surprised me. But as Wright points out in his speech, the phenomenon of the black church, of course, is very old. It goes back to prior to the existence of the United States of America. It goes back to the fact that slaves under the black codes were not allowed to congregate more than two at a time. And in fact, the only place they could speak one to another in large groups was via the church. There's a reason why the tradition of politics is in the black church and more so than in the white church. And that's because there was no other place to have politics. You couldn't get people in a meeting house to talk about politics. That was illegal. And so that's where blacks started speaking about politics. And there's a reason why most of the great black leaders were preachers, whether it's the Reverend Martin Luther King or the Reverend Jesse Jackson or the Reverend Al Sharpton. Most black leaders were preachers because, after all, that was the one place you could preach about politics. So Wright is right about that. And he goes on to talk about a wonderful book, Ralph Ellison's The Invisible Man, which I highly recommend. Speaking of how in America many African Americans, as well as their traditions, are invisible in the sense that they are like the invisible man right before us, all around us, but if you're not black and you haven't taken the time to investigate them, you might not know they are there. There's no question Reverend Wright was right about that. He's also right to point out that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning has been called the most segregated hour in America. Actually, it was Martin Luther King who said that. I wish Wright had quoted, had mentioned it was King's quote. He didn't say that. But it is true. And that's because, again, as Wright points out in his, I thought, quite good first half hour, that, ever since 1787, the blacks have been forced out of white churches, and they had to set up their own churches. And many of those black churches allowed whites as members, even at a time when whites didn't allow blacks as members. But that's simply our history. He goes on to talk about liberation theology. Now, liberation theology, as many of you know, came out of the 1960s and many of the struggles in Latin America. Latin America being a primarily Catholic area, of course, settled by Spain, a very strong Catholic country. In fact, there was Spanish Inquisition at the same time as it was in Spain. It was throughout Latin America. So it was even they enforced its Catholicism. You couldn't be a Protestant. You couldn't be a Jew in Latin America for many, many, many years. So there's a reason why these countries are Catholic. And because they're Catholic and because they were having real problems with dictators, a number of, you might call them radical priests, set up this liberation theology where they quoted accurately passages from the Bible where God is looking out for those that are oppressed, and point out that people should fight oppression. And this was seen as different from the prior Catholic Church, which is very hierarchical, very top-down. And Reverend Wright mentions liberation theology, and he talks about black liberation theology, the idea that blacks can learn from this liberation theology and can also reach to the prophets of the Bible in talking about God giving sustenance to those that are oppressed. Again, all of this I think is accurate, it's historical, and I think for many it was new material. Wright was very full of himself that day and seemed to think that the press knew nothing. That may be true for many of the press. I don't know that it was true for all of them, but he was definitely giving an education to some of them. He goes on to say that black preaching is different from European preaching, and I think that's largely true, though not always true, and black music is different from European music, again, largely true, but not always true. There are whites that do jazz. There are blacks that play classical music. One thing I didn't agree with him is where he said black learning styles are different from European learning styles. I don't think that's true at all. I think actually that's kind of dangerous to suggest that, because it suggests, frankly, segregated schools. I don't think black learning styles are that different from white learning styles. There are cultural things. Definitely certain cultures use language in different ways than other cultures. And some use more writing and some use more language. But I am concerned by some of the things he had to say, because it suggested that blacks and whites, to the extent that he suggested that blacks and whites have different cultures, well, I think that's obvious. Indeed, whites have different cultures, whether you be Italian or English or Spanish or Hungarian or Christian or Jewish or Muslim or atheist, Southern or Northern or Midwestern. We all have different traditions. That's true. And African Americans have different ones from white Americans many of the times. But when you start suggesting fundamental differences, then I have a real problem with it. But he goes on to say, talk about God looking out for the poor, the widow, the sick. Again, nothing controversial there. I think that's actually quite true and quite accurate. And he talks about the history of his church, the United Church of Christ, which, as he points out, was early in supporting the abolition of slavery, the United Church of Christ, which is a primarily white church that comes out of the Congregational Church, not only opposed slavery before 1865, but into recent times opposed the apartheid government of South Africa. And he quite proudly talks about that history, as well as the history of his congregation, a congregation that, and Barack Obama has talked about this, reached out to child care programs for the poor, the unemployed, reached out to the homeless and needy families while the government was spending all its money on Iraq. He also points out how many of the members of his congregation went and have fought in military service at the same time as he puts it, this is a quote, "Those who call me unpatriotic have used their positions of privilege to avoid military service." That's certainly true of George Bush and Dick Cheney. He goes on to praise his congregation for its HIV/AIDS ministry, the money it's given to high school students to attend college, which is quite substantial, advocating for people to form unions, health care for the uninsured, fighting unjust sentencing, particularly that sentences black people more severely for crack cocaine than white people for powder cocaine, drug and alcohol rehabilitation, and so forth. A number of things that are very good, very positive, and talks about the fact that no one is superior to anyone else, and we all have to work together. He gives the history of the black church and how it became separate, and says that obviously people who say they are Christians have all kinds of different views. Both the slaveholder and the slaves both said they were Christians, but obviously they saw Christianity very differently, one from the other. If all Reverend Wright had done was give that speech, which I have summarized for you, I think he would have been praised. I think he would have been seen as less controversial, and it might have actually helped Senator Barack Obama. But there's an old saying when you practice law as a trial lawyer, and that is you know when to stand up and speak and you know when to keep your mouth shut. The famous trial lawyer who asks one question too many often gets himself in trouble, well, or herself in trouble. Reverend Wright got himself in trouble when he started answering questions, because he was asked about the more radical portions of his sermons. And, well, what can I say? He went and he agreed with much of it. Some of the things he said made perfect sense. When they asked him about his patriotism, and he pointed out that he served 6 years in the military while Cheney avoided service. But then he went on further and said things that really, well, they went too far. He went on and talking about Louis Farrakhan. He called, he said Louis Farrakhan got 1 million people together on the mall. He didn't do that. There weren't a million people at the Million Man March. There were maybe 100,000. He said of Farrakhan, quote, he is one of the most important voices in the 20th and 21st century. That's what I think about him. One of the most important voices in the 20th and 21st century? I don't know what Reverend Wright is smoking, but Louis Farrakhan is not that important a voice. He's seen as someone who's a bit of a loony. What did Wright say about Farrakhan? He said, quote, when Louis Farrakhan speaks, it's like E.F. Hutton, all black America listens. Whether they agree with him or not, they listen, unquote. Well, that's not true. It is true for some, no question. There are some who listen to him. But most black people I know completely repudiate Louis Farrakhan. Most black people I know, and I don't think that the people I know are necessarily that different from other people, they think he does a lot of damage to black people. Now, I know he has some support. I don't deny that. But greatest voices and most important in the 20th and 21st century? Why? How? What's he said? I mean, much of what he says is simply false, and other parts are very much dangerous. Farrakhan has done some good in some drug programs, though mostly using totalitarian tactics, which I don't think most of us support. This is where Wright starts to veer into the dangerous stuff. Then he goes out and he specifically attacks Barack Obama. He was asked, what about Obama, when he said, you know, basically he doesn't agree with a lot of what Wright has to say. And Wright said, politicians say what they say, his direct quote, and do what they do based on electability, based on sound bites. Preachers say what they say because they're pastors. They have a different person. We both know that if Senator Obama did not say what he said, he would never get elected. So here, Reverend Wright is very clearly throwing Barack Obama under the bus. Here he's saying, hey, Obama, you don't believe in what you say. You're a complete hypocrite. You're only saying what you need to say to get elected. Ooh, boy, that's not good. Not good at all. He goes on to say that God damns some practices, and well, that's certainly true in the Bible. And he says, well, that it's things that the government has done, not the American people have done. But Reverend Wright didn't say, God damn the American government. If he had said, God damn the American government, well, I don't think many people would have had as much problems with what he had to say. He said, God damn America. And there's a big difference between God damn America and God damn the American government. He goes on to say basically that he won't apologize for anything until we apologize, we, the Americans, I guess, apologize for racism and slavery. Well, we should apologize for racism and slavery. I have often said on this program that I believe that the United States Congress should pass a resolution formally apologizing for slavery and also formally apologizing for the genocide we committed on Native Americans. So we should apologize for that. No question. But that doesn't, I think, give Reverend Wright the right to condemn everything about America. America has its good, it has its bad. And when he condemns everything, I do think he's toxic to Senator Obama. Wright said that Obama didn't distance himself from himself because he's a politician. Wright said, the media said I was anti-American, and so he said that Obama didn't really distance himself, and he was asked whether Obama actually heard the sermons, or did he sleep in the pew. Then Wright went even further. This is where I think Reverend Wright has always been his most dangerous. The moderator asked, one of the questions from the audience was, in your sermon you said the government lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Wants to know if he believes those words. So Wright did what I think many people do, what some who talk about the 9/11 conspiracy do. He said, based on the Tuskegee experiment and based on what has happened to Africans in this country, I believe our government is capable of doing anything. Now, let's think about that. There's no question in Tuskegee, back in the 30s through the 60s, our government practiced an experiment where it allowed African Americans who had syphilis to die rather than have treatment. It is probably the single most awful example of medical experimentation on people in this country's history. It's disgusting, it's awful, it was horrific. That doesn't mean the government invented the AIDS virus. One of the things I've always tried to do on my show is to distinguish between the actual awful things our government is doing and the things that are sheer speculation. And I do that for a reason. Not because I don't think our government is capable of anything, as Reverend Jeremiah Wright says. I think our government probably is capable of almost anything. But it's very important to distinguish between things we know to be true and things that at best are rank speculation and are probably lies. I don't believe that our government invented the AIDS virus and is using it to kill off black people. I don't believe that. Now, you know, someday someone may show me some evidence and I could change my mind on that, but I really don't believe that to be true. And that kind of conspiracy theory is, I think, dangerous. For one thing, it takes people who have HIV/AIDS and it says to them, don't get treatment. Don't get treatment. If the government is out to kill you, and if doctors are out to kill you, and if every doctor is like the Tuskegee doctors, and let me be very clear, 99.9999% of doctors are not like the Tuskegee doctors. The great, great majority of doctors are trying to cure you, not trying to kill you. Yes, there were the Tuskegee doctors. I don't deny that that occurred. But because that occurred, that's arguing by anecdote. That's saying that because there were these awful doctors, that all doctors are awful. And what does that mean? It means that people who have diseases don't get them treated. HIV is largely treatable today. Most people, if you're treated, do not die today from HIV. It's very different from the way it was 10, 15 years ago. But you're not going to get treatment if you think it's all a big conspiracy. Here, I think Reverend Wright does great damage to not just to his credibility, not just to Barack Obama, but to his own church. And he justifies it by saying, well, all the awful things that our government has done, which are true. You know, he talks about the fact that Saddam Hussein had biological weapons that we provided him. That's true. I've talked about that. But just because our government has done these 23 awful things does not mean you can make up other awful things. And this is why Barack Obama had to distance himself from Jeremiah Wright. What else in the questions he was asked? The other thing I think you should realize is that in these questions, part of it is the attitude. It's Jeremiah Wright throughout these questions. You know, it's amazing how much tone matters. He's laughing, he's grinning, he's making faces behind the moderator's back. There's a large audience there that's very supportive of him. He's not taking the whole thing seriously. And that's something else I think that is important. If he had said these things with a certain seriousness, if he hadn't been so happy to grab the stage and to blame every attack on him as attack on the black church, which I don't think is true. I don't think every attack on him is attack on the black church. Some of it was. Some of it was a misunderstanding of the black church. But much of it was an attack on Jeremiah Wright and for the excesses of what he has to say. Many of the things he says are not excessive. Many of the things he had to say were reasonable. But the media focused on the excessive, and Jeremiah Wright, instead of saying, I got carried away, reiterated it. And it, like I said, in doing so, has done grave harm to Obama's campaign. I want to play for you just a little bit of that question and answer session, just to get a feel for Jeremiah Wright and his responses to the media, and then I'm going to play for you Barack Obama's response at a press conference. But first, here's Jeremiah Wright at the press club.
Everything. Raymond and I don't agree on everything. Lewis and I don't agree on everything. Most of you all don't agree. You got two people in the same room, you got three opinions. What I think about him, as I said on Bill Moyes, and it got edited out, how many other African Americans or European Americans do you know that can get 1 million people together on the mall? He is one of the most important voices in the 20th and 21st century. That's what I think about him. I said, as I said on Bill Moyers, when Louis Farrakhan speaks, it's like E.F. Hutton speaks. All black America listens. Whether they agree with him or not, they listen. Now, I'm not going to put down Louis Farrakhan any more than Mandela would put down Fidel Castro. You remember that Ted Koppel show where Ted wanted Mandela to put down Castro because Castro is our enemy. And he said, you don't tell me who my enemies are. You don't tell me who my friends are. Louis Farrakhan is not my enemy. He did not put me in chains. He did not put me in slavery. And he didn't make me this color.
What is your motivation for characterizing Senator Obama's response to you as, quote, what a politician had to say? What do you mean by that?
What I mean is what several of my white friends and several of my white Jewish friends have written me and said to me. They said, you're a Christian. You understand forgiveness. We both know that if Senator Obama did not say what he said, he would never get elected. Politicians say what they say and do what they do based on electability, based on sound bites, based on polls, Huffington, whoever's doing the polls. Preachers say what they say because they're pastors. They have a different person to whom they're accountable. As I said, whether he gets elected or not, I'm still going to have to be answerable to God November 5th and January 21st. That's what I mean. I do what pastors do. He does what politicians do. I am not running for office. I am open to being vice president.
Now, again, just to give you an idea, what he said was, I'm hoping to be vice president. And behind the moderator, and some of this, you guys, I guess you have to see the video, he's joking, he's gesturing, he's smiling, he's making sort of some rude gestures. He's not treating this very seriously. And, of course, you heard what he just said about Barack Obama. Clearly, he threw Barack Obama under the bus. I'm going to take a quick break, give you a chance to call in if you want. I'm going to go into the first half hour of Bob's show today because I want enough time to go over all these clips with you. So there's more than enough time if you want to call and let me know what you think about any of this. It's 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. When we come back, I'll take some of your calls, and I also want to give Barack Obama's response to Jeremiah Wright. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Check this out. The Dems in Congress are preparing not only to give Bush all that he wants, and that's $108 billion in additional funding for his wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they're also going to give the next president $70 billion more to keep those wars going until July 2009. No matter what the voters say, no matter what the candidates pledge on the campaign trail. Nancy Pelosi, like other leading Dems for two generations now, doesn't want to appear soft on defense during an election year. But when does the imperative to do the right thing ever kick into gear and override the appearance factor? And why not just make the obvious case that the Iraq War isn't making us safer, so the sooner we're out of there, the better? Instead, Pelosi's trying to sweeten the pot for reluctant Dems by ladling in money for extended unemployment benefits and a new GI Bill, all in the same piece of legislation as the increased war funding. None of that will make it go down any easier with the people who voted the Dems into power to end this war, not to keep financing it. This is beyond capitulation to Bush. This is a grotesque crime of commission. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it. We'll be right back.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about Barack Obama's pastor, Jeremiah Wright, enjoying his 15 seconds of fame. And my hope, as many of you expressed in the chat room, that after these 15 seconds of fame are gone, we can then move past him and talk about other things. One of the reasons why I am talking about him, though, today is precisely so we can move past him, so that you know exactly what the pastor said and what Obama said. I'm going to be playing for you at length what Obama said. I think you need to hear what Obama said at length. I'll be playing it for you in the next hour and a half. I'm going to the first half hour of Bob's show, so that you know exactly what was said, so that if any of your right-wing friends or neighbors, or even of your, you know, Democratic friends or neighbors who are worried about Obama, you can tell them about it, you can use this show, and then it is certainly my intent to move on and not go into this further, because I do think, particularly when you hear what Obama had to say yesterday, you'll see that Obama has put this, hopefully, behind him as well. Let me go to the phones, though. I know Dave from California is calling in. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
A number of very legitimate points, and I very much appreciate that. One thought that has been burdening me a bit, and that is that once you establish the character, the modus operandi of a group, and I'm saying, let's say, this Bush administration, and you see that they pretty regularly operate devoid of character. They do exploit. They don't care about the harm that they do. They cause a lot of grief to stuff their own pockets. And once you've got that pattern in place, is it reasonable to expect that you have to start all over again and assume, well, maybe on this issue they're being totally honorable and credible? Or do we have a reasonable expectation that is consistent with their character? Yes, in all probability, they did this and that too. It's certainly not beneath them. So that's what I am throwing that out.
I just think in general, Dave, and you and I have had this discussion on many topics, frankly, far beyond Wright and Obama. It has to do with a point I firmly believe in, which is if you want to suspect the government of doing all kinds of awful things, that's fine. But until you have proof, there's so many horrific things that I can prove, that you can prove, that we all can prove this government has done. There is no question we torture people. There is no question that we send people to other countries to be tortured. There is no question that this government has rounded up American citizens, put them in jail without a trial, without access to an attorney. There is no question this government has wiretapped millions of Americans without a warrant, without any reason to believe they've done anything wrong. Given all the awful things this government has done, from Katrina to letting Osama bin Laden go at Tora Bora to totally messing up the war in Iraq, I think it is counterproductive, and I will continue to hold this argument, and I know you may disagree with me, Dave, and that's okay. I think it is counterproductive to start raising things that we think the government may have done that we can't prove. And the reason why I think it's counterproductive, and this is frankly the argument I had with Cindy Sheehan last week that got her so upset, but I think it's counterproductive to say other things that we don't know, that we can't prove, because what that does, I think, when we mix things we can prove with things we can't prove, it makes all the things we can prove look suspect. I have long argued that the election of 2000 was stolen. I can prove it. I can show you the votes in Florida. And I have reasonable belief that 2004, there were serious problems, too. If we mix that in with things we can't prove, like the suggestion that, you know, there were electric charges printed in the World Trade Center, or that the government created AIDS to kill black people, if we start mixing in with those things, I think the legitimate criticisms we have get lost, and people can say, oh, well, you know, those left-wingers, that they're crazy about all these things. So I have a real problem when Wright says these things, particularly about the AIDS virus. That, to me, is the most severe thing that he said.
You know, I'm thinking, Mark, that you and I could reach a reasonable compromise, and that is to say, if we spell out what we know that has been the pattern of this administration, and we say, is it therefore fair of us to speculate? We are not saying this to be a fact, because that's been their nature, but we question it. We must question it.
That's fair, Dave. No, I'll agree with you. It's perfectly fair to say, I know this to be true, and this I speculate to be true, and this is why I speculated, and here's the evidence backing it up, but I can't say that I have it. As long as we make a clear distinction between what we know and what we think we know, I'm okay with that. I really am. I just want to be clear, because I don't think there's any evidence that the U.S. government created the AIDS virus. I just don't think there's any evidence of it at all. It's and certainly not done as a way to kill black people. I think if you know the history of HIV in this country, it's a gruesome disease. Certainly the government did too little about it. I mean, Ronald Reagan never even mentioned the AIDS virus during his 8 years in the presidency, and that may be because the AIDS virus disproportionately attacks gay people and African Americans and drug users and all kinds of people that Republicans don't like very much. That's certainly true. And again, I guess that's the same thing with Katrina. You can talk about how the government didn't respond, but you can't say the government caused Katrina. What you can say is the government didn't respond and people died. I don't think the government caused the AIDS virus, but I certainly think that our government sat there. If you ever read Randy Schultz and The Band Played On, you know that our government did nothing while hundreds of thousands of people were dying. So, again, all I'm saying is there are legitimate criticisms. I bring them up all the time, but you don't need to add that added element, which I think hurts all legitimate criticisms.
I agree. I, too, have no evidence that this government caused AIDS with the intent of doing harm to black people. I do, however, look very analytically at real evidence in Katrina. I do look at them withholding aid for the better part of a week.
I agree with you.
Sending freshwater trucks back, saying, take it back to where you came from.
Absolutely.
Turning a hospital ship around and say,
right,
back out of here, take off.
I see
an administration there causing the death of a number of black people to turn
absolutely
a poor blue area red, and I see that overwhelming evidence. So
absolutely, and everything you just said, Dave, is a fact. Everything you just said has been reported in the press. There are eyewitnesses. There are pictures. Everything you said is a fact. Now, whether those facts lead to the conclusion, Bush hates black people and wants them to die, that's a conclusion that some people may draw and some people will not. I don't need to go there. People can draw their own conclusions. I can simply state the facts. And everything you've said is a fact about Katrina, and you're right about it. And the same is true on the AIDS virus. I can give you fact after fact that showed that when the government could have helped people, they didn't. Now, I don't think that's largely true anymore. It is true with things like abstinence-only education, which is silly and, frankly, I think helps spread disease. So there is stuff still going on today.
Would it shock you or me out of our shoes if we did learn that this administration allowed AIDS to run rampant in black communities? Would that seem totally inconsistent with what they're about?
It wouldn't, but again, I'd want to see evidence of it before I ever were to say it. And that's why the other thing, again, I think Reverend Wright is dangerous about is because, not just because all the other things that he says truthfully will not be respected, which is always a problem, I think, when we go into some of the more wild conspiracy theories, but also because, particularly with AIDS, I think what he does by suggesting it's all a grand conspiracy, he actually encourages people not to seek treatment. And that may not be his intent, but I think that that is a likely consequence of this and perhaps the most dangerous consequence of it.
Mark, you've been generous with your time, but I think you and I both, we do not think it would be reasonable to expect people that are aware of what's going on with this administration to go back to the starting point, to start at zero and say, well, maybe this administration is being totally honorable and forthright and trying to do the right thing, trying to help the people. I don't think we've got to go back to that point.
No, we don't. I may be being too fair to this administration. I may be giving a little bit of the benefit of doubt to people who should get no benefit of any doubt. I have no doubt that Bob Kincaid is harsher than I, and it may be a personality difference. I have plenty to rail on this administration without having to speculate about other things, and so I'll stick to what I know. But I certainly respect those that want to go further. That's just I'll stick to what I can prove. But thanks for your call, Dave. I always appreciate when you do call.
Shocked too often, Mark. I think Bob and I have been shocked too often. Thank you for being there, Mark.
Thank you. And I do want to play Barack Obama's response, because he gave an amazing response, an amazing press conference. Clearly, Senator Obama was angry. I don't blame him for being angry. I think we had all thought, I think Obama thought, particularly after his really magnificent speech in Philadelphia on race a month ago, that he had put Reverend Wright behind him. Clearly, he did not expect Reverend Wright to go to Bill Moyers and the press club and every which way to try to get his 15 seconds of fame. Clearly, he did not expect Wright to reiterate the extreme comments he's made on things like Louis Farrakhan and things like the AIDS virus. And so Obama gave quite a strong response. I want you to hear at length what he had to say.
Yesterday, we saw a very different vision of America. I am outraged by the comments that were made and saddened over the spectacle that we saw yesterday. You know, I have been a member of Trinity United Church of Christ since 1992. I've known Reverend Wright for almost 20 years. The person I saw yesterday was not the person that I met 20 years ago. His comments were not only divisive and destructive, but I believe that they end up giving comfort to those who prey on hate, and I believe that they do not portray accurately the perspective of the black church. They certainly don't portray accurately my values and beliefs. And if Reverend Wright thinks that that's political posturing, as he put it, then he doesn't know me very well. And based on his remarks yesterday, well, I may not know him as well as I thought either. Now, I've already denounced the comments that had appeared in these previous sermons. As I said, I had not heard them before. And I gave him the benefit of the doubt in my speech in Philadelphia, explaining that he has done enormous good in the church. He's built a wonderful congregation. The people of Trinity are wonderful people, and what attracted me has always been their ministries reach beyond the church walls. But when he states and then amplifies such ridiculous propositions as the U.S. government somehow being involved in AIDS, when he suggests that Minister Farrakhan somehow represents one of the greatest voices of the 20th and 21st century, when he equates the United States wartime efforts with terrorism, then there are no excuses. They offend me. They rightly offend all Americans. They should be denounced. And that's what I'm doing very clearly and unequivocally here today. Let me just close by saying this. We started this campaign with the idea that the problems that we face as a country are too great to continue to be divided. That, in fact, all across America, people are hungry to get out of the old divisive politics of the past. I have spoken and written about the need for us to all recognize each other as Americans, regardless of race or religion or region of the country, that the only way we can deal with critical issues like energy and health care and education and the war on terrorism is if we are joined together. And the reason our campaign has been so successful is because we had moved beyond these old arguments. What we saw yesterday out of Reverend Wright was a resurfacing and, I believe, an exploitation of those old divisions. Whatever his intentions, that was the result. It is antithetical to our campaign. It is antithetical to what I am about. It is not what I think America stands for. And I want to be very clear that moving forward, Reverend Wright does not speak for me. He does not speak for our campaign. I cannot prevent him from continuing to make these outrageous remarks, but what I do want him to be very clear about, as well as all of you and the American people, is that when I say I find these comments appalling, I mean it. It contradicts everything that I'm about and who I am. And anybody who has worked with me, who knows my life, who has read my books, who has seen what this campaign's about, I think will understand that it is completely opposed to what I stand for and where I want to take this country. Last point, I'm particularly distressed that this has caused such a distraction from what this campaign should be about, which is the American people. Their situation is getting worse. And this campaign has never been about me. It's never been about Senator Clinton or John McCain. It's not about Reverend Wright. People want some help in stabilizing their lives and securing a better future for themselves and their children. And that's what we should be talking about. And the fact that...
I'm going to move on here to Barack Obama's more direct comments on what Reverend Wright had to say. He was asked questions after he gave his opening statement, and I think you'll get a good feel for it by listening to those.
The outrageousness of his statements and his performance in the question and answer period yesterday, I think, shocked me. It surprised me. As I said before, this is an individual who's built a very fine church, and a church that is well respected throughout Chicago. During the course of me attending that church, I had not heard those kinds of statements being made or those kinds of views being promoted. And I did not vet my pastor before I decided to run for the presidency. I was a member of the church. So, I think what it says is that, I have not, I did not run my pastor through the paces or review every one of the sermons that he had made over the last 30 years. But I don't think that anybody could attribute those ideas to me.
What effect do you think this is going to have on your campaign?
You know, that's something that you guys will have to figure out. Obviously we've got elections in 4 or 5 days. So we'll find out, what impact it has. But ultimately, I think that the American people know that we have to do better than we're doing right now. I think that they believe in the ideas of this campaign. I think they are convinced that special interests have dominated Washington too long. I think they are convinced that we've got to get beyond some of the same political games that we've been playing. I think they believe that we need to speak honestly and truthfully about how we're going to solve issues like energy or health care. And I believe that this campaign has inspired a lot of people. And that's part of what, going back to what you asked, Mike, about why I feel so strongly about this today. After seeing Reverend Wright's performance, I felt as if there was a complete disregard for what the American people are going through. And the need for them to rally together to solve these problems. It now is the time for us not to get distracted. Now is the time for us to pull together. And that's what we've been doing in this campaign. And, you know, there was a sense that that did not matter to Reverend Wright. What mattered was him commanding center stage.
Have you had a conversation with Reverend Wright?
No.
What's going to happen if these distractions continue?
Well, I want to use this press conference to make people absolutely clear that obviously whatever relationship I had with Reverend Wright has changed as a consequence of this. I don't think that he showed much concern for me. More importantly, I don't think he showed much concern for what we are trying to do in this campaign and what we're trying to do for the American people and with the American people. And obviously he's free to speak out on issues that are of concern to him, and he can do it in any ways that he wants. But I feel very strongly that, I want to make absolutely clear that I do not subscribe to the views that he expressed. I believe they are wrong. I think they are destructive. And to the extent that he continues to speak out, I do not expect those views to be attributed to me.
I remember after the immediate stories, when the story immediately broke, Trinity Church, the current pastor, kind of defended Reverend Wright. I don't know how they've reacted to the latest, but I'm wondering if you continue planning on attending Trinity.
Well, the new pastor, the young pastor, Reverend Otis Moss, is a wonderful young pastor. And as I said, I still very much value the Trinity community. This, I'll be honest, this obviously has put strains on that relationship, not because of the members or because of Reverend Moss, but because this has become such a spectacle. And, you know, when I go to church, it's not for spectacle. It's to pray and to find a stronger sense of faith. It's not to posture politically. It's not to, it's not to hear things that violate my core beliefs. And I certainly don't want to provide a distraction for those who are worshiping at Trinity. So as of this point, I'm a member of Trinity. I haven't had a discussion with Reverend Moss about it, so I can't tell you how he's reacting and how he's responding. Okay? Kathy?
This has obviously been very hard for Barack Obama, and I just want to say this. The entire press conference, including the speech that he gave at the beginning, was all done without notes, without a teleprompter. It's clearly very heartfelt. I think Obama is angry. I think he is sad. And I think he does hope that this finally puts the issue behind us. I was actually very impressed with what he had to say, because I think he hit on the things that were most extreme that Wright had said, and at the same time made clear that, this is the break, if you will, with Wright that the press has been looking for, and hopefully can be used in a way that separates it when the Republicans try to use it against him, which they will. As I said before, I'm going into the first half hour of Bob's program because there's a lot to talk about here. I want to give you a chance to call in and let me know what you think about all of this. And the real question I have for you to think about is, why did Reverend Wright, who had this most famous parishioner, why did he sabotage Barack Obama? Why does Wright seem to have it in for Obama? Wright would have no fame at all, or very little, if it were not for Barack Obama. What is it about, that relationship that caused Wright to do what he did this weekend? Is it jealousy? Is it something deeper? I want to hear your thoughts on that. I'll give you mine as well. Toll-free number 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. When we come back, you'll hear Bob's opening, but I still got a half hour to go. So stick with the Inside Scoop. We'll be right back after this.